We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
This podcast episode is brought to you by Coors Light. These days, everything is go, go, go. It's nonstop hustle all the time. Work, friends, family expect you to be on 24/7. Well, sometimes you just need to reach for a Coors Light because it's made to chill. Coors Light is cold lagered, cold filtered, and cold packaged. It's as crisp and refreshing as the Colorado Rockies. It is literally made to chill. Coors Light is the one I choose when I need to unwind. So when you want to hit reset, reach for the beer that's made to chill. Get Coors Light in the new look delivered straight to your door with Drizzly or Instacart. Celebrate responsibly. Coors Brewing Company, Golden, Colorado.
John Tetta! What a score! What a screamer!
Celebrate topping the Europa League group on a podcast by putting out the Europa League lineup. This is the Arsenal Vision post-match podcast. My name is Elliot Smith. You can block me on Twitter, Yankee Gunner, and I am now the proud father of a second child. That's right, my second daughter, Addison, is my first daughter. My second daughter, Sophie Rose Smith, was born sometime between us going down 2-0 and us rescuing it at 2-2. And so I think it is fair to say that it is not fair to say that she's the reason we recovered that and topped the group, but it's fair to say that she's not the reason that we recovered it and topped the group. So obviously, mama doing well, baby doing well, very excited and very happy about that. And basically, since she's been born, we have scored 2 unanswered goals and topped a European group. So I feel pretty good about her as an omen of things to come, a harbinger of things to come. Having said that, my inability to be available for obvious reasons, and sleep deprivation and other things, means that we have a bit of a hodgepodge here. So I'm going to waffle on for about 2 minutes, and then I'm going to give way to Paul and Scott. Tim and Clive could not operate around the very bizarre schedule we were trying to work with, but normal service will be restored next week. I will let you know that we are giving away things that you can win. You can win an Arsenal shirt, you can win a year of our Patreon, and you can win a year subscription to The Athletic just by going to arsenalvisionpodcast.com/win. So please do. And we'd love to see you over on the Patreon. We have some wonderful people there who have been interacting with each other in a pleasant and supportive way over on the Discord. And it's just a lovely place that I like to spend time, and I hope you will join us there. I am not going to put any promos into this pod, so you will not hear about the enclosed. But if you do want to go there, enclosed.gifts is where you can go and get money off a multi-month purchase and sort out your lingerie needs for the holidays. You can also sign up for The Athletic at all the relevant links, theathletic.com/ClivePAFC, to make Clive sing a holiday song. And then you can figure out the other links. I'm not even going to give them. I just hope Clive winds up having to sing. By the way, if he does wind up having to sing, I have a feeling that that will be a long night in the editing bay for me. No offense to Clive, of course. In any event, I am thrilled that we topped the group. I am obviously greatly concerned about the City game coming up. My 2 cents on this game, you know, I watched it under very weird circumstances on my phone the first half while my wife was sort of just waiting around for things to get moving, and then sleep deprived in the middle of the night while my new baby was catching 30 minutes of sleep on my phone for the second half. And My quick take is, first of all, I love the lineup Freddie picked. I mean, maybe I would have hoped for Guendouzi to be left out and start at the weekend, but otherwise, you know, heavy rotation is the way to go here. I think that the one thing that you can't escape is that we have bad central defenders and there's no hiding them. There really is no hiding them. There were a lot of really cheap giveaways early in the first half that were comical. Two bad deflections for the goals. I don't think Standard did much to hurt us. I don't have too much of a problem with the performance given the lineup. I mean, you look at how many kids are out there, and it's Mavropanos, who hasn't played in ages. Maitland-Niles restored to the team, but you know, hasn't played a lot recently. Guendouzi is young, but obviously an experienced player at this point. But Saka, Smith Rowe, Nelson, and sort of half interested Lacazette for part of the game still had the quality to head in from a brilliant Saka cross. I thought the kids did all right. I think Smith Rowe, when he was able to get on the ball, influenced the game well. Obviously, Saka won the game for us with two brilliant moments, and I thought he had some great moments in the first half getting forward. First half was mostly about them not hurting us, us having the better chances while not doing a lot. The back three is a problem for this team because it just struggles with ball progression. And in general, this season, what's been our problem? What was our problem the first half of the weekend? What's been our problem all season? Progressing the ball through midfield, finding routes to the front three. I think there are distance issues and spacing issues across the pitch, and those are probably going to be there for a while until we have a coach who sorts it out and figures out a way to line this team up so that the midfielders are stretched across the pitch vertically and horizontally properly, and the forwards occupy the right spaces and there's connectivity there. But I think we'll see bits of it in fits and starts. I wouldn't be expecting much this weekend, but that's all right. Look, overall, we do top the group. I think the Europa League is a competition we still, even as poor as we have been, can win. Because we were a terrible team last season, we were in the final. The season before, we were a pretty bad team, and we were in the semifinal and really unlucky not to get past Atleti the way we played in that first half, first leg, I should say. So all in all, the key was to top the group, and we did. And how we got there doesn't much matter to me, especially in the context of the kind of season we've been having. I think it is exciting that we have these young kids that are playing a lot. I do wonder a little bit about what we are exposing them to, and Freddie sort of said after the game, hey, let's not beat up on these kids. I don't know that anybody has been, but I think he recognizes that we've been through a rough road. There's more potentially rough spots ahead on this road, and the kids are going to be along for that ride, and hopefully it doesn't drag them down. And I think from a fan's perspective, there's not a lot of chance of that happening. I'm not too concerned about that. Obviously, I mean, there were moments, if I were watching the game live, I'm guessing that Twitter would have been a pretty nasty place at some time in the game, down 2-0 at Liège. People worrying about maybe not even qualifying, and the result wasn't going our way with Frankfurt beating Vitória at one point. But you got to love the Europa League, man. I mean, only in the Europa League can you play as poorly as we have, draw away to a team that you beat 11-0 in the reverse fixture, and have the team that was likely to top the group fail to beat Vitória after leading, lose to Vitória. We come back to equalize and we top the group. I think it's a competition that absolutely suits us. So I'm thrilled about that. The reality is that while tactics can overcome some defensive issues, we will never be good enough with the center backs we have. None of them. And I mean, maybe Holden gets there and maybe Chambers can fill in a bit. And obviously you hope that Saliba will eventually be a guy that we can rely on. But right now, pick your car crash. You know, if Mustafi and Chambers are out of the team, we're going to say it should be them. If Holding is out of the team, we're going to say it's going to be should be him. If Socrates is out of the team, so on and so forth. Louis is obviously, you know, not an answer either. So I just think whatever the issues all over the pitch, those defenders are problematic. And I think Leno is better than Martinez, and he didn't always make it easy with some of his distribution. But we're through, we're top, and that's what matters. The weekend is a scary proposition. I mean, I think it's great that we have a little teeny bit of momentum, and City certainly do not. Given their domestic form, but they're a team that can create boatloads of chances. And we are a team that likes to concede boatloads of chances, and they have the quality to not miss any of them. And the one thing I have worried about with this team is there a hiding waiting around the corner for us? Is there a game where we could get heavily, heavily beaten because the defenders are bad and the organization isn't great? And depending on whether, you know, Bellerin is available for the weekend and what central defenders are available and Tierney is out and Cole is not, you know, great defending the wide spaces. And, you know, who's going to be up against Sterling? Are we going to get overrun in midfield with Torreira and Xhaka trying to stop the likes of Kevin De Bruyne? And I do worry a little bit, you know, if City find a little form, what the scoreline could be here, but we're not really competing with City for anything. We, you know, obviously want to keep our top four hopes alive, whether or not we're able to do that. I would be prioritizing the Europa League is sort of my subtle way of answering that question. But we live in hope. We'll see. I mean, obviously, getting a result against City is the kind of thing that can jumpstart a whole season. So we'll root for that. We'll stay upbeat. And as I said, my daughter, my newborn daughter, Sophie Rose, has not seen Arsenal do anything other than score two unanswered goals in top of European group. So that's a good sign. So here's what we'll do. We will take a brief pause, play a little music, and when we come back, you will hear from Paul at Positive My Pants and Scott at @O_that_crab for the remainder of the pod. Normal service resumed after the City game. As always, we love you. Stay with us. More after this.
So, welcome, Scott.
Thank you.
And a little woohoo from me. So,
yeah, and a little yeehaw.
Yeah. Now that there's nobody else around, we're very low key about that stuff. It was a lineup. I'd even say an interesting lineup that Freddie went with. I wonder what it tells us. We had three at the back, four in midfield, Willock and Guendouzi sitting. We had Rowe on the right, Nelson on the left, Lacazette through the middle. What do you think the significance was of that? Either do you think it was purely a reflection of the day, the game, Standard Liège, and the players we had available, or is there a possibility this was some kind of tipping of his cards for how he's looking to hold off City at the weekend?
I think you could kind of see it a little bit of both ways. So I think more than anything, I think you look at our left-back situation and we don't have one right now, with Tierney out and Kolasinac not really a traditional left back. And then, you know, we look down at the youth ranks and there's not really a left back that looks to be, you know, right on the cusp of things. So I think he's seen that Saka has played left or wing back in his past. So he's like, all right, I could probably squeeze him in there, you know, rest Kolasinac for the weekend. I wouldn't be surprised, actually, if he probably went with the back three again, because Kolasinac is just so much better as a wing back instead of an actual left back. So I think it's a little bit of both.
Yeah, especially maybe if it's Maitland-Niles on the right side this weekend. He came off a little early, and certainly Arsblog commented he might have had some tight hamstrings there. So I guess it depends who's available. If we assume Hector isn't ready yet, then we may have two players who are much more comfortable as wing-backs than full-backs.
Yeah, I mean, it would be really bad. Yeah, it might not be good to see Chambers out there because, you know, I think Chambers actually looked pretty good at the center-back position, and, you know, he didn't play in this one, so he might be slotted as a center-back choice for, you know, City. So we'll see about that one as well.
Yeah, and again, it's a second tryout for Socrates in a back three against Standard Liège. But on the left-hand side, which he's not the best ball carrier or passer in the world, but especially when he's being forced out to that left wing, it's just on his wrong foot, or he tries to pass back across the pitch. So, you know, if we go with three against City, we saw him in a three here, and he wasn't too startling again. That for me is a little bit of the worry with three at the back. It's not doing Socrates any favors. Makes us a little edgy, nervy. If we line up with this, I think City's going to be aggressively targeting a number of players. That would be one of the areas.
Yeah, I agree. Because there was definitely times against Liège where Arsenal definitely did not look comfortable, you know, playing up in the back, and that could be a big red flag for the weekend.
Yeah, I mean, Martinez, I think in his first couple of Europa League games for us, did a pretty good impersonation of Bernd Leno at the back. I mean that in the most positive sense. But his last couple of games have been a little stickier, and certainly his distribution in this game kind of put the hair up on your arms a couple of times. I wonder if the pitch wasn't great, but there was more to it than that. He just seemed a little labored in this and invited trouble. We seemed to survive his passing out from the back. So we had Wilkin Guendouzi in the midfield, but if you look at the first half, it was a pretty slow, steady progression for us. We seemed to largely have the game in hand. In terms of Freddie picking young players, which he did for this, do you think any of the young fellas moved their case forward? I mean, we had Nelson, Smith Rowe, Willock on the pitch and a Saka over on left wing who had a stormer towards the end. But ignoring Saka's brilliance, do you think overall any of the youths moved their cases forward, or was it a missed opportunity?
I thought Reece Nelson actually played fairly well. I think he's actually been, he hasn't been spectacular in the matches that he's played, but I thought he's been overall fairly solid. To me, he seems to be a player that kind of gives you a certain level, and you know, he's not going to, you know, exceed that level, but he's not really going to give you a stinker of a match either. So I think he made a case that he might be able to get some game time over the holiday period if we need some rotation that goes in.
He seemed tidy. On the other hand, if he needed to break through, because he's got a lot of competition besides our standard front three and Mesut Ozil looking for a spot if it's getting crowded. You know, you got Saka and Martinelli both making the case to start on either the left or the right. So there's some depth there he has to get past.
Yeah, and I thought Martinelli actually in his little cameo was quite impressive as well, with his ability to kind of inject energy into the match, and his movement was something that was very badly needed, because that was something when you watched Arsenal in that first half especially, it was just very static from our front. So I thought that his addition into the match, you know, really changed things. So I think that he's probably going to get a start against City. So I wouldn't be surprised if that's the case for him. I thought Joe Willock actually had a pretty good game in this one. I think that in general, when he plays a little bit further back, he's able to get more involved in things. In this one, he was our second leading passer, 52 of 58 on the day. So that was, you know, a nice thing to see him be able to get more involved in the match. Because when he's playing at that 10 position, he has a tendency just to disappear.
We'll come to Martinelli later, but I definitely think he understands the word impact in impact sub.
Yes.
But we'll talk a little bit about that. Willock's an interesting one. I'm a big Willock fan in principle, but it feels like he's kind of letting things slip a little bit at the moment. I agree he was good. I liked his passing. You know, he has legs on him, and he can dribble, and he can beat a player and push through midfield with a little bit of the Vieiras or the Diabys about him. But he still has this thing where he somewhat switches off out of possession. We see it on the goal where he's not aware enough of needing to either put the foot through it or to make a clean pass somewhere. But the other thing that struck me, coming back to your buddy Martinelli there, is Martinelli comes on, and within a couple of minutes, we lose play upfield, and they're countering against us. I don't know if you remember this. And one of their players streaks through midfield, and Joe Willock's trailing him. And he's running along at a pretty good pace, but like they're two goals up at this point. And suddenly Martinelli comes tearing from an attacking position, blazes past Willock onto that player and rips the ball off him. And you suddenly think, oh yeah, that's what a recovery run's supposed to look like. It's one of my frustrations with these young fellas. Maybe I just have projections of my own youth and my own youthful vigor. But the one thing you can do while you're trying to establish yourself in the team is do what Project Martinelli is doing, which is every time you get on, just tear up trees in terms of effort. And we saw that with Willocker early in the season. There's that one play where he loses the ball near the touchline, gets pissed off about it, goes tearing back and makes a great tackle. And there's fucking videos been made of it, GIFs, everything. We're building a statue outside the stadium for him based on that, because it lights a team up, and that's what Martinelli does every time. It amazes me sometimes that the young fellas don't do the one thing that's pretty easy for them to add to the game, which is just sheer work rate for the 90 minutes they're on.
So that's definitely a way to get yourself endeared to the fans. I wonder if it's some of it is that, you know, you start overthinking, all right, what am I supposed to do position wise you know, you start getting a little bit too much into am I making sure that the shape that we're supposed to be in is right. I wonder if that's kind of a thing that, you know, they don't trust necessarily their instincts of where they're supposed to be, because, you know, it's a little bit, you know, unfamiliar. So I wonder if that might be a thing that happens sometimes.
Yeah, I think that's very fair. I mean, they got a lot on their minds in terms of, am I doing what the manager, am I where I am? How's my game going? But it does amaze me that you don't see more of what Martinelli does from other players. One player who did seem to put it all out there, and he was totally shagged by about 70 or 80 minutes. I thought Smith Rowe looked really good. Nothing fully came off for him, but he did seem to be our brightest spark in the first half and for some of the second half, but he totally ran out of gas at one point. He was kind of playing on the right, but also had maybe a freer role, dropping into midfield, doing some approximation of Aaron Ramsey as a 10, but also out on the right, which was never his favourite position, but he found himself there quite often. I thought him in particular, I guess he's one of my eyes to the future, but he does seem to have all the tools in terms of passing, dribbling. He's fast. He looks like he'll fill out nicely, and he's got a shot on him. Him and the thing I notice about him and Saka is every time they take a shot, it's a bloody good shot. I think we saw two or three shots from Saka earlier before he nailed the cross and then the goal that showed he doesn't have. You'd see with the Iwobi, he'd do a lot of good things for us, and I know his role was a little different. But man, he took a lot of shots, and not all of them gave you great confidence that he was a fraction away from scoring. And do you have any feel for Smith Rowe and Saka in terms of just their general tidiness in possession and in the final third?
Yeah, I thought it was an encouraging match from Smith Rowe. He's been dealing with injuries, so it was nice to see him get back on the field. You could definitely see that he definitely got exhausted by the end. He did needs to get the fitness back up, but it was definitely good to see him. He was one of the, got a shot. His passing was tidy. I think he was one of the leaders in actually passing into the attacking third. So that was something that he did seem to be probably the creative outlet for the team that was on the field. So I thought that was definitely a good performance from him and something that hopefully he can build on. We'll have some of these FA Cup matches coming on, and I'm not sure if he's going to put himself in position to really get in for the Premier League coming up anytime soon, but I think there'll definitely be some more games for him to play.
Yeah, I mean, there's a job there to be had. It does seem like a big stretch for him this season, but there's a job there to be had because outside of Ozil, we don't really have a player who can weave it all together in the final third centrally. He has a huge amount to prove, but there's a job there. Guendouzi can stitch the play a little bit, but I know Elliot fancies him as a 10. I don't yet. I still feel he feels more comfortable squarely in midfield, dropping back and, pushing forward a little bit. But outside of Mesut in the 10 spot, there's a position to be had there by somebody if he can step up quick enough. Do you see him as having that? I mean, he's more Ramsey-ish maybe than Ozil, but he does seem a very clever player, a heads-up player who can join the dots and has the kind of running physicality you tend to see with Ramsey.
Yeah, and I think he did kind of play that right wing kind of like Ramsey did. It's definitely tucked in a little bit more as a midfielder playing it instead of as a forward playing it. So I liked that. That is definitely something that is missing from Arsenal right now, is a player who can create for other players and who has a little bit of that ability to find a pass. So I think that's something that is needed, and I think hopefully he can grow into. But I think this is a good time to transition into Saka, who I think was easily the player of the match. He led basically in all the offensive categories, had 5 shots, created 4 chances, created 2 big chances and a goal and assist. So it was definitely a day for him, and I was very glad to see him excel.
So here, I thought he was great. Anybody who didn't think he was great was nuts. The one thing that surprised me was he only had 2 tackles and he was successful with both of them. So either we're doing a great job covering with Socrates, or Standard Liège missed a trick, especially in the first half, to target his area. They made a change early in the second half. They brought on the big fella up front, and they were much better at moving the ball around to the wings and kind of getting into those pockets that maybe stressed his area a little bit. And they got that goal very early on in the second half. I think it was within a minute or two, which kind of started to dictate the narrative. I thought Saka was generally excellent, if not tested as an out-and-out full-back for the game. He's just so tidy, so clean on the ball. Tim is always a man for saying young players don't really start scoring goals. You can't really count on them for goals till they're like 24 or so, and I think I generally agree with that. But there's the other part of it that says, if you've got it, you've got it. And Saka's got it. And Martinelli has got it. I think Smith Rowe has it, but we haven't had enough chance to see it. And Eddie has it. They just score goals from a young age. So I think Tim's right. But I also think if you've got it, you've got it. And Saka has it. So here's my question for you with Saka. We think of him as a left, as playing on the left wing or a left winger. But mostly we play with inverted wingers. Is there a reason why he has been and will continue to be a left? Because him and Martinelli may well be competing for the same spot, but maybe not. Maybe Saka needs to switch to the right, become an inverted winger, take those shots on his left foot. I mean, ironically, he did quite a nice job on his wrong foot putting that away, but he still didn't have the same whip he would have had he done a Pepe-style curler into the far corner. What are your thoughts on Saka going forward?
I still kind of like the traditional, you know, left-footed guy on the left-hand side.
He whips in a great cross. I guess the other thing is then if he's got Tierney on that side, they can both do that. And we don't actually have... it's ironic we got our first goal with Lacazette off the head and Martinelli can get in there, get his head on it too. But we don't really have a lot of guys who get in there for those crosses.
Yeah, and I think if you're kind of thinking about like the way you know, if you're setting up to build a team, you know, it's kind of nice if you have, you know, one inverted one instead of, you know, having both guys. Because then, you know, you kind of balance out a little bit. You know, force the defense to, you know, respect the full width of the pitch. Then you're also not looking for your fullback. If you're going to have one fullback who pushes up, you know, you can have one fullback on, say, the right that's going to be the overlap, you know, provides you with on that side. And then, you know, your other left, you know, if it's going to be your left winger that's out on the pitch, who's going to be wide, you know, then your left fullback can actually be a little bit more reserved and not have to constantly be overlapping. And then, you know, kind of give yourself a little bit better balance between things. So I don't mind that. And, you know, I think that's actually something that Pep did quite a bit with Leroy Sané, you know, staying out on the left as an actual traditional, you know, winger who stays wide, you know, to be able to provide the little bit more balance in the team, you know, be able to make the defense respect you. So you have one guy who cuts in and one guy who stays wide. I thought his ability to take those shots from the channels actually looked pretty good from his left foot. He had the one that was really kind of, you know, it was a tough angle, but he forced a good save there. And then he had the other one that was a little bit further out, you know, maybe, you know, about the penalty spot, but out of the channel. And he just missed that, you know, top corner. And it was one of those that, you know, they saw the replay from behind the goal and it was like, oof, that was really just like inches away. So I thought that, you know, his ability to take those shots was pretty nice. And I do like that he actually does put his foot through the ball and he actually takes the shots with conviction, which is something that, you know, not always that you see with young players. So like you were talking about, he does seem to have a knack for finding shots and then also, you know, takes them with the confidence. He's, you know, actually, if he's going to take a shot, he's going to actually go through it and do it all the way.
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot I liked about Iwobi. He did a lot of good things for us in terms of building play, etc.
And yes, his technical ability was probably one of the top players on the team. You know, there wasn't somebody that I felt, you know, that was more secure with the ball.
Yeah, I was always good for value add on passing and all that good stuff. So it's a little bit of apples and oranges. But once you get into the box, man, I'd much prefer to see Saka or Martinelli with the ball at his foot taking a shot from that side. And it seems like every time those guys connect, almost every time, you know, as you say, they can put their foot through the ball because technically they take good, clean shots. And like, man, can he whip a cross in. Him and Tierney from that side can both whip in a delicious ball. I mean, the interesting thing on the sack across for Lacazette is Martinelli has managed to get in from the right-hand side. He's run straight into the six-yard box, and he's in that classic position where he got the previous front post header. Not quite as far past the front post, but he's actually in probably as good or better position than Lacazette. He's got right in there again, so... You know, we need players to get in when those guys are putting in the crosses. But Lacazette isn't that tall, but he's not shy of a header. But Aubameyang and Pepe don't strike me as living and breathing, throwing their head at the ball in the middle.
No, and I think that run, too, by Martinelli really helps. So it's not a two-on-one against Lacazette. So Lacazette actually has a chance to go after that ball. And, you know, he has a better-than-50-50 chance at being the one that wins it.
Yeah, and I think he doesn't pull a man, but he does pull attention towards him. Lacazette bumps his marker and slips behind him. That extra body in the box that Martinelli provides every single time is likely to keep him high up the options in terms of impact subs, and Saka is going to be right there with him. I mean, in general, I think you're right. It's nice to have that mix between the two wingers. What's your read of Freddie and his approach to setting up an 11 at this stage? He's played a bit of three at the back, but maybe more interestingly, he does seem to have gone with a single striker and basically a couple of wingers. Even with three at the back, it was kind of a 4-2-3-1, but not the four at the back. The 2-3-1 was very much the feel of it upfield.
Yeah, and then, you know, you definitely saw David Luiz kind of milled up into, you know, more of the defensive midfield role when we were in possession. So it was definitely kind of like a 2-1, you know, then, you know, the 3 and then 1 kind of a thing. Yeah, kind of a way. So I liked that, you know, the shape that everything like that. And I do like that he has kind of made the decision to pick one of the strikers. You know, you just watch Arsenal when, you know, Lacazette and Aubameyang were on the field. And you can definitely tell that they like playing together. You know, they seem to be good friends and, you know, all that kind of stuff. But I think as a team, Arsenal play better when it's just one of them. Because, you know, we have to make such big compromises to put, you know, say, you know, Aubameyang out on a wing. And it just really loses a lot of his ability. So I think that it's probably the right call. You know, I think that it's a tough one to make when you have, you know, one of our, you know, three highest, you know, biggest transfer fees ever. And, you know, you're having to leave him on the bench. So it's a big call that he's making, but I think it's the right one.
So in general, would you lean into Pepe on the right and then Martinelli on the left?
I think that's probably how I would.
It's amazing, isn't it?
For the weekend. Yeah.
An 18-year-old might be a starter and
the Brazilian lower leagues.
Yeah. And with he'll need a backup, and that could be Saka. So now, of course, they'll want to get Lacazette on the pitch, and maybe they'll push Aubameyang out there, etc. But it's pretty intriguing. Life comes at you fast when you're Project Martinelli, but he's right in the frame.
Yeah, and I think it's one of those things you could probably tell him, hey, we're going to give you 55, 60 minutes, so go out there and, you know, harass City and, you know, give it all you got, because, you know, you don't need to save yourself for 90 minutes. So that might be something that, you know, he can get a little bit more of his defensive stuff in there as well to really help, you know, whoever's, you know, playing on the left. If it's Kolasinac, you know, he could really help with that. And then, you know, you bring on Lacazette at, you know, the 55, 60 minute mark. And then, you know, we have, you know, maybe we're in a position there where, you know, we've kept it close. We have both of our strikers. Maybe something magical happens. You know, I'm trying to be hopeful here for the weekend.
Yeah. So, all right. So
talk myself into it.
Yeah. So let's quickly work our way through the high and low points of the second half. So they were playing like a team that actually wanted a result, and they got pretty energized in the second half, maybe not so much in the first half. They moved the ball well. Both goals were kind of fluky, but in some sense they were also earned. They were putting pressure on us. They zipped a couple of balls across our six-yard box that nobody got on the end of for them or for us. So you kind of got to say maybe it was kind of coming. But we talked about Willock and the sloppy passing out. I think that was the second goal. But in both cases, we had a Greek centre-back doing that thing that most or all centre-backs do now, where they jump up and rotate mid-air. And, I mean, it cost PSG, I think it was, heavily in the Champions League doing the same manoeuvre against United. And you get this handball thing that happens as your arm spins around. It pulls it a little bit away from the body, but even if it doesn't, both seemed kind of lazy, protecting yourself, throwing your back into it. And while it's unlucky, both were handballs as the arm spun around because you were swinging that arm towards the ball. So much as I'd like to just say, oh, that's kind of bad luck, it was kind of a bit sloppy. Isn't there an argument to say, be braver? I don't like the ball in the face. I bet they don't either. And the whole area of concussion is becoming a more serious thing, taken more seriously with football all the time. But what were your thoughts on the goals? Bad luck or sloppy and take it right in the front?
A little bit of both. I mean, so yeah, it's a little bit sloppy. You would like to see it. Maybe they could get out a little bit faster on them, close the guy down, and then, you know, there's less area for it to, you know, or you're going to get more chance to block it a little bit cleaner. So, I mean, it's bad luck to, you know, you don't try to hit it with your hand or anything like that. And, you know, the way it bounces off and into the goal, you know, that's just, you know, that's not on Martinez or anything like that. That's tough to you know, recover on those. So partially it's sloppy, partially it's bad luck. I think overall it wasn't, you know, the worst defending Arsenal have done this season. I think overall they did pretty good about keeping them to, you know, relatively low quality chances. They, you know, outshot, you know, them, you know, so that's, you know, another positive. So I don't have a ton of bad things to say about the defense. You know, the goals were kind of fluky. Yeah, I mean, if they didn't go in, they might have been called penalties. They might have been said, hey, it's too close kind of a thing. It's one of those. Either way, it could have gone.
Yeah, I'd love an expert centre-back viewpoint on, you know, body, kind of body shape, body position. It just looks like the kind of thing it invites a little bit. That spin, that arm, the deflection, and making your body bigger and just taking it right in the nads just seems like what real men do. But I hear they hit that ball pretty hard, so who knows. So we went down the two goals, and we brought on Martinelli, and it did seem like, I know people said, oh, the game changed when he came on, and I'm like, I don't really know. So I went back and looked at it again, and yeah, I think it probably did. He energized us in a number of ways, individually contributed, and especially on the Saka one, the 1-2 for the Saka goal, he actually plays a very important pass to keep the play alive before that, as well as the 1-2, which is quite skillful, because Saka kind of knocks it to him, and it's a little bit, I would say, behind and away from Martinelli, and he still gets a good touch on it to get right across his body and perfectly into Saka's path, who has a beautiful, simple touch to keep it right where he wants it. And again, it's on his right foot, and it's a beautiful goal.
And yeah, no, I thought it was really good. Yeah, back to the defender, you know, he had a guy right on him, and, you know, he really played that one well.
Both goals, in a sense, were, what I liked most about them was they weren't on the cards. They were basically out of not very exciting positions where Saka really made something happen. I mean, the cross was not, he hadn't got to the byline. There was nothing. It's the kind of goal that gets scored against us where you're like, but there was nothing there. We, you know, we were in position. We should have been fine. And somebody whips in a cross and pow, and he just did it all with one ball.
Yeah, and it really is something that I actually would see against Arsenal, because he had so much space out there, and then the Liège defender was pretty relaxed about going out to actually close him down. I wonder if that's also partially, you know, it's like, I don't want to get dribbled past here. He kind of was just, you know, kind of like that tentative, you know, closeout that you see.
He's like, I got this covered, which is very Arsenal, and then the fucker puts in this absolute zinger. I mean, it's a cruise missile laser right where you don't want it as a defender.
Yeah, it was a great cross.
Yeah, and you know, it ain't a one off. He can do that. Tierney can do that. We've seen that multiple times. So that's pretty exciting if you can get guys on the end of it. I don't know that we always have guys charging in to get on the end of it, but we did this time. We had two of them. And then the second one, I mean, again, Saka's got the whole defense in front of him and decides to jink him one way. 1-2 his way through with Martinelli, and Pau were back in it, but then we kind of run out of a little bit of gas at that point, and maybe we think 2-2 is okay. And I thought it was funny in Freddie's comments, was it Saka who says, yeah, Freddie was trying to get word to us that Frankfurt had fallen behind. I'm like, because you often wonder, what's the coach do with that information? Does he keep that to himself and get them all fired up so that they're like running their nuts off, that they're going for that extra goal? So it was kind of funny to hear Freddie was desperately trying to get the results information onto the pitch so they knew where things were at. So maybe that's why we kind of coasted a little bit as time went, as the half played out.
Well, I think everybody just looked tired too. I know it was kind of weird, but you know, the whole the first half was pretty slow, but that second half it really kind of opened up a little bit more, and I think everybody just was just tired by the end of it.
Yeah, I guess in the end it was pretty end to end, and Liège aren't brilliant. They're third in the Belgian league, but they actually look, maybe that's something to do with us, but they actually looked pretty good, especially in the second half. They're pretty physical, technical, big guys. And you saw them bumping up against the kids. and they moved the ball really well in the second half, I thought, in particular. So it wouldn't be surprised if the kids ran out of gas.
Yeah, I was actually pretty impressed with them. They actually looked like a pretty strong team. And then, you know, they'd also beaten Frankfurt and Vitoria at home. So I guess they're not a bad home team.
Yeah, I guess overall it was fair enough and a good evening.
It was just enough. Everything, we talked about this a little bit earlier, but it was fine. You know, I mean, the defending was, you know, bad, but, you know, wasn't as bad as Arsenal can be. The attack was good enough. We were probably the better of the team, and we got the result we needed.
Yeah. Good. So, all right, let's wrap up on Standard Liège. We're not doing any promotional stuff this time around because Elliot isn't available, but... You know, I would still advocate that people continue to wear underwear. I think that's a good thing. Make sure your girlfriend's wearing underwear. And you can make sure she changes it once a month by signing up with the Disclosed. You know, if we lose that sponsor because of that, we've always got The Athletic. So we've got our promotion for The Athletic where somebody... You mustn't be able to sing at all, Scott, because you're not even one of the four being pushed forward. I think Clive...
I think they were so worried that I would mispronounce all the words in whatever Christmas carol I was going to sing.
Yeah, okay. So it seems like everybody's favorite is Clive. I think they imagine he's going to sound a little bit like Barry White, which I think is ridiculous.
I thought he was going to be more Al Green, but okay.
Yeah, either way, I think it's all very offensive. What they don't realize is I have an absolutely great concept for my... karaoke thing. It's going to be a two-person, this is my big push for picking me, it's going to be a two-person rendition borrowing Elliot to do the little drummer boy replicating the performance of David Bowie and Bing Crosby. So I'm just going to dangle that out there for a last-minute push for the promotion through myself. Anyway, that said, let's do a little quick preview on City and how you think we might or even should line up against them this weekend. You did an analysis of the probability of our success, and basically we're most likely get totally pasted. But what's your personal feeling on it? Do you think we have a chance here, and how do we set up for the best?
So I think, we just did the Project 32 version 2, or the return, or whatever it's labeled. I can't recall right this moment. And I think I was incredibly pessimistic. Apparently I was in a bad mood when I was actually making the predictions. But I think I had City 4, Arsenal 1 in this one. So I was not overly optimistic. I'm starting to feel a little bit better because, you know, you gotta get yourself in that frame of mind to be able to actually want to wake up early and watch these matches. So I think I'm hoping that Arsenal can, you know, maybe make it interesting and, you know, make a draw a possibility. When I ran the simulation, I had Arsenal about 20% to win, and then I had 17% for a draw. So City are pretty heavy favorites for this one. So it's not – the numbers don't look good for Arsenal.
How would you set up for this game to achieve that effect? Let's assume we've got Maitland-Niles fit. And maybe the interesting one is, what do you do if you have Pepe? You play him. And what do you do if you don't have Pepe?
So, I mean, I think overall, I mean, I might lean towards three at the back for this one. You know, maybe, you know, you think you got, you know, three of the center backs, so you got to have Kolasinac and, you know, Maitland-Niles out there. So I don't really trust them as fullback. So you got to go with the three. And then in midfield, is it going to be Torreira and Xhaka? Probably.
Yeah,
and
I mean, they seem to have been well rested. They weren't even on the bench, if I remember right.
Yeah, I'd probably go with that, the 3-4-3 formation. So then, you know, Pepe, Aubameyang, Martinelli, like we talked about earlier. I think, you know, you give Martinelli the instructions that go give me everything you got for, you know, 60 minutes. And then, you know, bring on Lacazette. And hopefully at that point, you know, the game is still within reach. And, you know, you can hope to get something from it.
So it's going to be, you know,
I don't think I would pick Ozil in this one.
Yeah. They didn't bring him on the trip, which makes you think that maybe...
I think because you got to go three at the back, I don't know if he's going to be in there. And then also, we're probably not going to have much sustained possession in this match. So I just don't know if he really fits with how we want to be able to play.
I don't know. I kind of feel Freddie may just lean into the 4-2-3-1 and keep some momentum going and playing the players he rested, so... Going to be very interesting. I mean, I don't disagree with your analysis, but just for consistency and momentum. Maybe he plays the team that began to click against West Ham. But I guess we'll see what we see. Any other last reflections on the game for the weekend?
I just hope to not get blown out.
Yeah. So what's your prediction?
I'm gonna revise it and say 3-2.
Okay.
To City.
It does feel, I have no idea why I feel like we have a shot at getting a result here, getting a draw. We shouldn't have any shot at it. They've got their own challenges defensively, but are we good enough to take advantage of it? Have we worked out how to lock things down at the back? So I think we have a shot at a draw, but I could see a 2-1 where we lost.
Yeah, I just expect them to be able to score goals.
Yeah. And us to not be able to stop them.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, we'll see.
I just worry about that. Especially, you know, we're missing, you know, both, you know, starting fullbacks most likely. You know, they have an abundance of attack. They are going to want to come out and, you know, avenge their previous Premier League results. So I think they're just going to want to come out and look to destroy us.
Yeah. Great.
I just worry.
Thanks for that, Scott.
I'm a basket of sunshine.
Clearly. Right. Well, let's wrap it up there. We'll see what we see up the Arsenal and all that. And we'll have the regular crew hopefully back together on Monday with a proper host and a proper show. So thanks, Scott. Have a great weekend. Up the Arsenal.
Yeah. We'll talk to you after, what, you know, Arsenal 10, Manchester City 10?
Indeed. Woohoo!
Yeehaw!
Yeehaw!